earlier today, I spoke to President Bush and I offered him and Laura our congratulations on their victory. I did my best to express my vision and my hopes for America.
So today I want to speak to every person who voted for my opponent. To make this nation stronger and better, I will need your support, and I will work to earn it. I will do all I can do to deserve your trust. A new term is a new opportunity to reach out to the whole nation.
Those, of course, are excerpts from this afternoon's concession speech by Senator John Kerry and the acceptance speech by newly reelected President George W. Bush, of course. We're going to be talking in this 20 minutes here, about 30 minutes, with Jan LaRouve, Concerned Women for America, about the aftermath of the elections yesterday, beginning with the U.S. Senate. We'll talk about judicial appointments, state ballot initiatives on both the life issues and gay marriage. In a few minutes also, we'll be joined by Kristen Day of Democrats for Life. We'll get a pro-life Democrat's perspective on yesterday's election. And then in about a half hour, open lines for your questions and your comments. It's the last 15 minutes of the program, but it is the last live time of open lines here on Issues, Etc. Your reaction also to the aftermath of the election during that time. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jan LaRouve is Chief Counsel for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Jan, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you so much, Todd. What a great time to celebrate.
Let's start with your analysis of what happened in the U.S. Senate races and what that might mean for what seems to be an inevitable judicial appointment or appointments from the president to the Supreme Court in the next 4 years or so.
Well, there's no doubt whatsoever that the president's hand has been strengthened greatly by the significant pickup of Senate seats. And more importantly, the defeat of Tom Daschle, the Senate minority leader who led the abusive use of the filibuster to prevent up and down votes on eminently qualified judges. I was calling it a shot across the bow to the obstructionist Democrats, but it's more like a big one down their smokestack. Margin of victory for the president and the gains in the Senate are clearly eviscerating any chance that the Democrats are going to be able to get away with doing what they have done in the last term to control the federal courts.
A couple things. First of all, are you saying that the filibuster that was used there to block judicial appointments in the last term will not return?
I'm saying that they will not be able to get away with it by saying things like the president stole the election, the president doesn't have a mandate. I mean, that's all gone. And the fact that we have taken out their champion in South Dakota tells them that, you know, come the next election, if they, you know, resort to that same obstructionist filibustering, they too can be taken out.
How many justices might be appointed by George W. Bush in the next term?
Oh, it's easily can be three. We're very saddened by this terrible news about the Chief Justice, who's been a staunch conservative, committed to the text of the Constitution in most of his decisions. He's age 80 and he has this cancer. He's been hanging on as long as he could so that it would be a Republican president that would name the new Chief Justice. And so we've got him, we've got, John Paul Stevens, age 84, Sandra Day O'Connor, who has had a bout with cancer. So we've got maybe three seats and one very soon, perhaps.
Is there any idea, let's just talk about one judicial appointment, if the president says, all right, I'm going to put my best person forward, and let's say Rehnquist says I need to step down, any idea who the president might have in mind for the Supreme Court?
Well, if the Chief Justice steps down, then, you know, that is the most crucial position. And, you know, you'd think the likely candidate would be Justice Antonin Scalia, whom the president admires very much, but he has tended to be more of a lightning rod. The opposition would come out en masse against him, but that doesn't mean that the president ought to not think about elevating him. And then there's been some talk about making Clarence Thomas the Chief Justice. Certainly, Anthony Kennedy has been vying for that position for a long time, but he is totally unacceptable to conservatives who want the Constitution interpreted by its text rather than, you know, the invisible ink that some of these justices use to advance their political agenda.
And we passed Proposition 71 to fulfill the promise of stem cell research and to make California a global leader in this important health care effort.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger announcing the passage of Prop 71. Tell us about what happened there yesterday.
Well, it's a great disappointment, and sadly, the people of California, where I live most of my life, have fallen for all of the media hype about the virtue of embryonic stem cell research. I mean, they're being sold snake oil, and for them to commit, you know, the millions of dollars to chase this rabbit down a hole that will lead nowhere is a colossal waste of public resources. They ought to be putting that money into adult stem cell research, where we have seen, you know, literally hundreds upon hundreds of people treated successfully by this research. And, you know, at least 56 illnesses and diseases that have been successfully treated by adult stem cell treatment.
What do you do with a governor there? He is obviously popular in California. He wasn't able, obviously, to deliver California in any real sense to George W. Bush during the presidential election in terms of electoral votes. And on these social and moral issues, Governor Schwarzenegger, although he has an R behind his name, is pretty much thumbing his nose at the party and at his president.
Well, you know, the R today doesn't necessarily mean anything other than a rhino, and that's really what Arnold Schwarzenegger is. He's an economic conservative, but admittedly extremely liberal on moral and social issues. And while I'm not going to judge his heart as to why he is advocating embryonic stem cell research, I think it's more out of ignorance. He like Ron Reagan Jr., aren't qualified to be speaking about it. They are falling for these bogus claims that have been made about it, and it's tragic.
In Florida, there was a proposition that had to do with parental consent and abortion. I read in the newspaper this morning that with the passage of this proposition, it would make it possible for a law concerning parental consent to be passed in Florida. Didn't this proposition give Floridians a parental consent law?
My understanding of it is that it authorizes the legislature to pass such a bill. And it is strongly supported by the majority of Floridians and of the legislature, as far as I know. And Jeb Bush, the governor, will sign it in a heartbeat. So hopefully the legislature will begin immediately to craft a law that will pass constitutional muster and protect parental rights and also young girls from exploitive abortion.
Nothing turns on one election, one ballot initiative, or one moment in time. There are many, many moments of one step forward, two steps backward. I mean, this is not a question of if, this is a question of when.
Now, that's Carol Jakes of the Human Rights Campaign. They are a pro-homosexual, pro-gay marriage organization, as you well know, Jen. She said it's not a matter of if, but when. They're going to keep trying for gay marriage in spite of all the propositions, 11 of them, that passed in one form or another against gay marriage. Tell us about it.
Well, I have no doubt that they will, but they've got to be really demoralized, although they admitted that they would lose all of the marriage initiatives. There were 11 of them, and the only one they held out any hope for winning was in Oregon, and they lost that too, despite the fact that HRC kicked in at least $500,000 to defeat the initiative and also sent staff there. These are people who are, you know, zealous advocates for deconstructing marriage, forcing their will on the American people, despite the fact that, you know, as we saw yesterday, the vast majority want marriage limited to a man and a woman. However, what they can't win in the legislature, they will continue to pursue through judicial activists. And that's why they, too, are so concerned about any appointments the president will make to the federal courts.
Final question with only about 30 seconds here. Give us the big picture, then, if you could. Tell us about yesterday's election as it impacts the pro-life and the pro-family mindset and agenda in the United States.
Yesterday's victory for President George W. Bush was truly a result of people voting moral values. Liberal media elitists are utterly stunned by it because that's how out of touch they are with mainstream America. And so the pro-family forces have every reason and right to continue to support the president to keep his word. He said he stood for our values. Now it's time to continue to push them through policies and to see that they're protected in the courts by judges who will be faithful to the Constitution.
Jan LaRue is Chief Counsel for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Their website, CWFA.org, CWFA.org. Jan, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Going into the break here, we're going to be talking with Kristen Day. She's Executive Director of Democrats for Life, based in Washington, D.C. Very interested to get a pro-life Democrat's perspective on yesterday's election. Kristen Day, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
First of all, Kristen, let's hear from Andy Kohut. He, of course, is from the Pew Research Organization. This is what he had to say about moral values in yesterday's election.
I think we learned that moral values was the sleeper issue of this campaign. It was named as often as voters named the economy and terrorism, and more often than they named Iraq, as what was on their minds when they were casting ballots. And the people who said that moral values were an issue overwhelmingly went to President Bush.
Kristen, your thoughts on this. Did the Democratic Party miss this?
They sure did. And, you know, the pro-life issue is one of the most important issues that we're talking about this election, especially with the Supreme Court and the balance. And the Democratic Party, they missed it 4 years ago. And, you know, unfortunately, they didn't learn their lessons 4 years ago and failed to address this important issue this time around, too. And it was devastating losses for us.
What's it like to be a pro-life Democrat on a day like this when there has been arguably more or less of a sweep in terms of the Republican Party, and one might argue, maybe by extension, the pro-life movement? Are you torn here?
You know, I am. I'm really torn. It's a difficult day because, you know, the Democratic Party just is not looking too good right now. But at the same time, it's a big wake-up call. And we hope that the leadership will recognize the issues that they missed and you know, will be willing to talk to us and really work on, you know, moving our party away from the clutches of NARAL. NARAL led us in the wrong direction. They've been leading us in the wrong direction. And it's time for us to wake up and, you know, and everyone talks about the Christian right. It's time for us as Democrats to talk about the Christian left, who are not recognized at all, and they came out in force yesterday and voted for Bush.
If President Bush had been running against a pro-life Democrat, do you think he would have lost?
I absolutely think President Bush would have lost if there was a pro-life Democrat in there. They're saying that the pro-life issue gave him an 8% advantage. And just over the last month, you would not believe the number of phone calls and email messages and just people torn because, you know, they were against the war, and but they really felt that this pro-life issue was so important, and also the moral issue, you know, it was very important, and they didn't feel comfortable with the Democratic Party, you know, focusing on the issues that they were focusing on, instead of talking about protecting, you know, all stages of life, including the unborn, and that just wasn't the focus.
Were you able to count any victories for pro-life Democrats nationally yesterday?
Yes, we absolutely were. It was a good day for pro-life Democrats, and especially one in West Virginia. President Bush carried the state of West Virginia. However, a pro-life Democrat won the governor's race against a pro-life Republican, and I think that says a lot. And we won legislative races all over the country, including Iowa. The Iowa State Senate is now 25-25. And we're only two seats away now from a majority in the Iowa House, and that's largely due to the minority leader Pat Murphy, who is ahead of the times as far as the Democratic leadership. We've been talking to him about. He called us and said that, hey, you know, we need to wake up and we need to run pro-life Democrats in pro-life districts. Instead of going to NARAL and Planned Parenthood and saying, who should we run in these districts, we need to look at the district and who will win it.
Mm.
And, you know, we had Ray Zirkelbach won and a few other, and Tom Hancock won for the Senate, and there were some good pro-life Democrats who won there. And also in Iowa, Bill Gluba was running against the budget chairman for the U.S. Congress, and he had very little support from the DNC because he was a pro-life Democrat. And he came away with 44% with very little money and just spreading this pro-life issue. So, you know, I think it's very encouraging for pro-life Democrats as far as where we go from here.
Now, Jerry Costello in our listening area yesterday won, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was running against a pro-life Republican, and they both had 100% rating from Illinois Right to Life on the pro-life issue.
Right. Yeah, Congressman Costello is just a really good pro-life Democrat, and we just really appreciate his leadership in the House. And we've been talking to him about, you know, what do we do now? What do we do after this election? You know, how do we move our party away from the wrong direction it's been headed? And so he's been very supportive of our work.
You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Kristen Day about a pro-life Democrat's perspective on yesterday's election. She's executive director of Democrats for Life based in Washington, D.C. At 5:30, we're going to take your phone calls on yesterday's election. Just a brief 15 minutes with you of open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Prior to the election, when all the speculation, when everyone was speculating, my producer and I were speculating, if George W. Bush were to lose, had lost, both of us had serious doubts as to whether or not the Republicans would have put up a pro-life candidate in 2008. What do you think? The Republicans, that they would have backed off on the life issue to win the White House. What do you think, Kristen?
Well, I think, you know, that would have been, yeah, I wonder if they would have. I'm so thankful that, in that aspect, that he did win, because, you know, I think it's important that we have two pro-life parties if we're ever going to, you know, stop the number of abortions from happening. So, yeah, you know, I wonder if they would have backed away. That's a good question. You know, especially if we look at California, you know, the Republican Party has been smarter than us in running pro-abortion Democrats in the districts that they think they can win, and in California. So they may have backed off the issue, but
What specifically does the Democratic Party have to do? And in other words, will the Democratic Party learn from this and do what it needs to do? What are those things?
We're very hopeful that the Democratic Party will learn from this. One thing I've noticed today already is pro-life Democrats are motivated. This election motivated pro-life Democrats. Whether or not the Democratic leadership learns a lesson from this, pro-life Democrats are definitely going to be more vocal, and they're going to be out there a lot more. I mean, today we already had 10 new members sign up, and they want to be active and help us reach the the Democratic leadership and really focus in a new direction.
Do you think that they will at least start supporting what's called abortion alternative legislation that doesn't legally strike at Roe, but does say informed consent laws for women or the funding for crisis pregnancy centers, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot of Democrats in Congress do support that, and whether or not we see more leaning toward those, it's hard to say. We sure hope so. And you know, with this election says a lot about what the American public believes, and you know, it's a big wake-up call. And you know, we're just very, very hopeful and very encouraged that the leadership will look at this. And I think our party needs to step back and you know, take a month or two and say, let's look at what went wrong. And obviously, one of the big things that went wrong was we missed the moral issues. And you know, it's a big one that we missed.
Who is the most prominent pro-life Democrat? And is there a chance that he or she might be a presidential candidate 4 years from now?
There are several prominent pro-life Democrats. You know, obviously in the U.S. Senate we have Senator Ben Nelson and also both retiring Senator Del Miller, who he said he is born a Democrat and is going to die a Democrat. And he is very supportive of what we're doing, too, even though he did speak at the Republican convention. But he really wants our party to come back to the party that he believes in. And in the House side, we have lots of good Ike Skelton, Jerry Costello, Bart Stupak. You know, there's a lot of good pro-life Democrats all over. And, you know, I've already been contacted by a couple of different organizations saying that they want to help us put forth a pro-life Democrat in 2008. And with our Iowa chapter just starting up, the possibility is there that we could – There could be a fight for a pro-life Democrat.
With only 30 seconds, did you see a move when the candidate, the Democratic candidate, John Kerry, towards the end of the campaign, started saying things like, "I believe life begins at conception. I am personally opposed to abortion," and yet still, obviously, keeping his record of a pro-choice vote. Did you see a move there?
You know, he was talking about that a little bit, but it's a little bit too late, and his record was pretty clear. And you know, he was pretty clear about appointing only those justices who, you know, support abortion rights, and you know, overturning the Mexico City policy as his first duty when he elected president. So it was pretty clear where he was going. If he really wanted to make some concessions to the pro-life movement, he had to go a lot further than just saying that he believes life begins at conception.
The website for Democrats for Life, democratsforlife.org. It's all one word. Kristen Day, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much.
Kristen is Executive Director of Democrats for Life, based in Washington, D.C. After this break, 10 minutes for your phone calls on yesterday's election. This is your last opportunity live here on Issues Etc. to join us with your thoughts, and this is your opportunity to react to what happened yesterday and earlier this morning. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In particular, what are your expectations for the next 4 years? Answer that question on the far side of the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Scripture teaches that the highest duty and privilege of Christian parents, above feeding their children, clothing their children, and educating their children, is bringing up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This duty includes putting them in mind of their baptism, putting Holy Scripture into their hands, and bringing them to the services of God's house. How do we faithfully parent our children? You'll find answers in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens. For those with younger children, we're offering Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. These books are $9.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find more information on Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. Or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. issuesetc.org.
Intelligent design, good for government schools.
Answers with Ken Ham.
whose ministry is building a large creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, you know, the intelligent design movement, Ken, is trying to get the idea that life arose from an intelligence taught in public schools now. Isn't that a good thing?
Well, I do understand the dilemma in America and other countries concerning the teaching of origins in the public school system. Because of the way the courts have ruled, teachers can't use the Bible in science classrooms in our current education system. Now, on the surface, it does seem a good idea to get the teaching of intelligent design in the education system. After all, they're not using the Bible, but just bringing up arguments, and some good scientific arguments, to challenge the idea life could evolve by chance. But people need to understand that this movement, by and large, does not question evolutionary geology, evolutionary cosmology, evolutionary biology, or even evolutionary anthropology. Many in the intelligent design movement believe in Darwinian evolution as long as an intelligence, whoever that intelligence is, directed it all. You see, students aren't challenged to question anything they're taught in regard to origins except that it happened by chance. You know, ultimately, what students are taught about evolution will just be reinforced. They'll only be challenged to believe that some intelligence is behind it. But this movement is not directing students to believe in creation as the Bible teaches.
Our website, AnswersRadio.com, will answer many of your questions about the Bible's accuracy. Just log on to AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Heinz Funky Purple Ketchup has been a big hit. Kelly Stitt, a senior marketing manager for Heinz, is not surprised. When asked about it, she replied, quote, "All our advertising is targeted to kids. You want that nag factor, so that 7-year-old Sarah is nagging mom in the store to buy Funky Purple," end quote. It is appalling that manufacturers use the media as a tool to manipulate our children for their own corporate profits. Our sons and daughters are more than mere consumers. They are redeemed children of God, saved by Jesus' suffering and death on the cross. Our children are to be loved, nurtured, and respected, not manipulated and used for financial gain. Do your children a big favor. Teach them to recognize and avoid such media manipulation. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
In the tempest storm of claims to human authority in the church, we are reminded by God's word that we should obey God rather than men. By that same standard, we are then reminded that no man is above God's word. Please join the people of Salem and Zion Lutheran Churches in Perry County, Missouri, in the faithful application of this biblical standard throughout the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. For if a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand.
Okay, 10 minutes of open lines for your reaction to the election. That should cover it. We can get the whole thing covered in 10 minutes here in the last part of Issues, Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The obvious question, I'd like your answer to it. What are your expectations for the next 4 years? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'll tell you what my expectations are. Come about mid-January in 2005, I plan to have a cigar in my mouth, if possible, at the Smokeout. It's an annual event that happens to coincide, just by coincidence. It takes place in Fort Wayne, Indiana. A bunch of men and women who are also invited to come and smoke cigars one evening and talk theology. Two things that go together beautifully. You know, if you don't like brandy, theology goes very well with a nice cigar. And it just so happens to coincide with the symposium series at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's kind of a footnote to the Smokeout, actually. But by the way, the symposium is going to be held January the 18th through the 21st on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The 20th Annual Symposium on Exegetical Theology, the 28th Annual Symposium on the Lutheran Confessions. These are the kind of things you don't want to miss, folks. You have the opportunity to have some of the best speakers from around the world. If you'd like a list of those complete list of those speakers, just go to the website for Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, www.ctsfw.edu. Click on events, then click on symposia. And so while you're going to the Smokeout in Fort Wayne, Indiana, you might as well go to the symposia too. That website address again is www.ctsfw.edu, January the 18th through the 21st, for the 20th Annual Symposium on Exegetical Theology, or the 28th Annual Symposium on the Lutheran Confessions, there on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What is your reaction to last night? My reaction initially was relief. I'll be quite honest with you. In two senses. One, I was very happy to see George W. Bush win. I was. And the issue for me is life. And the issue for me is judicial appointments. And I was talking to my parents today, and I said, look, I'm not going to stand on tradition, but it's the life issue that tipped it for me and that gave me that sense of relief. And the other was, finally, this thing is over with. Just relieved to have it over with. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do you expect for the next 4 years? Dennis is up first. He's calling from his car. Dennis, welcome.
Hi, Todd. First of all, thank you for doing what you do, and continue to do it, please.
We will.
And I guess my thought here was, as I was listening to your last guest, you know, I welcome all the Democrats aboard on the pro-life issue. I'd love to have them. However, I was thinking in terms of, we kept talking about moral issues, and I thought there was certainly more than one moral issue here that perhaps carried the day yesterday. So I would like to know where they stood on or stand on the rest of these moral issues.
Give us a short list, Dennis, of those other moral issues apart from the life issue.
Well, the one particular that comes to mind would be the gay marriage issue.
Okay, that's a good one. Do you have any others that...
I don't know, not that comes to mind immediately. I certainly see Texas as a moral issue.
All right. Dennis, thank you very much. I guess taxes could be a moral issue, but I think in this case, unless you're talking about, say, tax-funded abortions, or if you're in California and your tax money, $3 billion of it, is going to go pay for embryonic stem cell research, that's where taxes can become a moral issue. Okay. Dennis is concerned about the Democrats' concern for other moral issues. Well, if the exit polling is telling us anything, it's those who voted for George W. Bush, it wasn't only the life issue, it was these other moral issues that not only brought out the response, but also that played a role here. Now, we talked about this a little bit earlier, and we heard from Andy Kohut of the Pew Research Organization. Here he is.
I think we learned that moral values was the sleeper issue of this campaign. It was named as often as voters named the economy and terrorism, and more often than they named Iraq, as what was on their minds when they were casting ballots. And the people who said that moral values were an issue overwhelmingly went to President Bush.
And that's Democrat and Republican, by the way. Democrat and Republican. Those who listed moral values as top of their list. And the same thing happened in 2000. It just happened on a smaller scale. What about the rest of you? What is your reaction? What are your expectations for the next 4 years? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. People are already taking credit, by the way. I already got two emails. Now, they came from the same news organization, unsolicited, from the Christian Communication Network. But two emails already this afternoon of organizations that are taking credit for putting Bush over the top. One is the Christian Coalition. They don't come out and actually say, Bush, you owe us. They don't. The one that I got from Operation Rescue does. It says, Mr. President, you owe us. We put you over the top. Now, I find this quite interesting. This is, you won't hear this elsewhere on Christian radio, so listen up. This is a quote from the Christian Coalition email that came out. It's a mock press release. Christian Coalition says Christian evangelicals made a major difference in the 2004 presidential election. They go on to take credit for it. Roberta Combs says, we are pleased that both the executive branch and the legislative branch will be controlled by pro-family conservatives. And I thought to myself at first, hoo-wah? The executive branch, yes. The legislative branch, in the House, perhaps, yes. In the Senate, even with the gain of 3 seats in the Senate, there is not a pro-life majority. in the Senate. They can't cobble together a pro-life majority in the Senate, even with the gain of three seats. Now, pro-family, maybe, but of course everybody claims to be pro-family. They go on to say that there was a major conservative backlash which played a major role in the election outcome, and Christian evangelicals made the major difference once again this year. We need to be careful about this. Now, everybody's going to claim credit for getting Bush elected. That's fine. I understand that. But because they want to seem important. But I think we need to be concerned as Christians that we don't turn this into Christians put him over the top. Well, Andy Cohet says, well, moral values put him over the top in terms. But moral values and the Christian faith are not coterminous. People can have moral values on gay marriage, abortion, and all the other things. Embryonic stem cell research. They can have moral values without being Christian. Christians have not cornered the market on moral values. Before we go claiming credit, well, here's another one. The sleeping giant, this comes from the Christian Coalition, the sleeping giant has awakened and will refuse to be intimidated by secular fundamentalists. One election, 51%. Yes, there was a sweep in the Republican Party. That's undeniable. Happy to see that happen. But does that mean the sleeping giant of the church has awakened and is now going to refuse to be intimidated by secular fundamentalists? Little news flash for the Christian Coalition. The church may have awakened on moral issues. It is in a coma when it comes to other issues. And many of the same Christians who are arguing for us to go out there and make a difference in the culture are willingly inviting the culture into their churches on Sunday morning. And are bending over backwards to ape the culture on Sunday morning. So, you know, this is a knife that cuts both ways. So two thoughts there. Before we claim credit for, as Christians, for making the difference, let's remember we did not corner the market on morality. I would certainly hope that we as Christian citizens and Christian voters would welcome everyone who shares indecent moral values to make that known at the ballot box so that we can have a more just and decent society. We'll wait and see what the polling data has to say about the degree to which Christians made the difference. I think it is a little bit of hyperbole to say that the sleeping giant has awakened and will refuse to be intimidated by secular fundamentalists. Yet, one election does not a sleeping giant awaking make. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk about vocation with Pastor Mark Sell of Concordia Publishing House and a two-hour conversation with John Seleska on the Book of Exodus. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. How can parents apply the doctrines of law and gospel with their children? Find out with our Issues Etc. Books of the Month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. For more information, go to issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find information on the entire Faithfully Parenting series. Or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040.
AM 850 KFUO Clayton, St. Louis now concludes its broadcast day. KFUO AM operates with a signal strength of 5,000 watts on a frequency of 850 kilohertz. Some of today's programs may have contained persons or opinions not in agreement with the management of this station, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Join us tomorrow when AM 850 KFUO returns to the air. Have a pleasant night, and may the peace of the Lord be with you.